Buying Happiness by William Dawson. Chapter 1. The House of Bondage. For a considerable number of years, I had been a resident in London, which city I regarded alternately as my paradise and my house of bondage. I am by no means one of those who are always ready to fling opprobrious epithets at London, such as a pestilent one, a cluster of squalid villages, and the like. On the contrary, I regard London as the most fascinating of all cities, with the one exception of that city of eternal memories beside the Tiber. But even Horace loved the olive groves of Tivoli more than the far-range splendors of the Palatine. And I may be pardoned if an occasional vision of green fields often left my eye insensitive to metropolitan attractions. This is a somewhat sonorous preface to the small matter of my story, but I am anxious to elaborate it a little, lest it should be imagined that I am merely a person of bucolic mind, to whom all cities or large congregations of my fellow men are in themselves abhorrent. On the contrary, I have an inherent love of all cities, which are something more than mere centers of manufacturing industry. The truly admirable city secures interest and even passionate love, not because it is a congeries of thriving factories, but rather by the dignity of its position, the splendor of its architecture, the variety and volume of its life, the imperial, literary, and artistic interests of which it is the center, and the prolongation of its history through tumultuous periods of time, which fade into the suggestive shadows of antiquity. London answers perfectly to this definition of the truly admirable city. It has been the stage of innumerable historic pageants. It presents an unexampled variety of life, and there is majesty in the mere sense of multitude with which it arrests and often overpowers the mind. As I have already, with an innocent impertinence, justified myself by Horace, so I will now justify myself by Wordsworth, whose famous sonnet written on Westminster Bridge is sufficient proof that he could feel the charm of cities as deeply as the charm of nature. "Earth hath not anything to show more fair," wrote Wordsworth, "and of a truth London has moods and moments of almost unearthly beauty, perhaps unparalleled by any vision that inebriates the eye in the most gorgeous dawn that flushes alpine snows, or the most solemn sunset that builds a gate of gold across the profound depth of Borrowdale or Wastwater. He who has seen the Tower of St. Clement Danes swim up, like an insubstantial fabric, through violet mist above the roaring strand, or the golden cross upon St. Paul's with a flag of tinted cloud flying from it, or the solemn reaches of the Thames bathed in smoky purple at the slow close of a summer's day, will know what I mean and will, it is possible, have some memory of his own which will endorse the justness of my praise." From this exalted prelude, I will at once descend to more prosaic matter, leaving my reader, in his charity, to devise for me an apology which I have neither the wit nor the desire to invent for myself. With the best will in the world to speak in praise of cities, it must be owned that the epic and lyric moments of London are infrequent. As a casual resident in London, a student and spectator, free to leave it when I willed, I could have been heartily content. But I, in common with some insignificant millions of my fellow creatures, was bound to live in London as a means of living at all. He is no true citizen who merely comes up to town for the season, alternating the pleasures of town with those of the country. He alone is the true citizen who must live amid the roar of the street all the year round, and for years together. If I could choose for myself, I would even now choose the life of pleasant alternation between town and country, because I am persuaded that the true piquancy and zest of all pleasures lies in contrast. But fate orders these things for us, and takes no account of our desires, unless it be to treat them with habitual irony. At 25, the plain fact met me, that I must needs live in London, because my bread could be earned nowhere else. No choice was permitted me. I must go where crowds were, because from the favor or necessities of such crowds, I must gather the scanty tithes which put food upon my table and clothes upon my back. When eminent writers, seated at ample desks, from which they command fair views of open country, denounce with prophetic fervor the perils which attend the growth of cities, they somewhat overlook the fact that the growth of cities is a sequence, alike ineluctable and pitiless, of the modern struggle for existence. One cannot be a lawyer or a banker, a physician or a journalist without neighbors. He can scarce be a literary man in perfect sylvan solitude, unless his work is of such quality, perhaps I should have said such popularity, that it wins for him immediate payment, or unless his private fortune be such that he can pursue his aims as a writer with entire indifference to the half-yearly statements of his publisher. In respect of the various employments of trade and commerce, the case is still plainer. Men must needs go where the best wages may be earned, and under modern conditions of life, it is as natural that population should flow towards cities as that rivers should seek the sea. These matters will be more particularly discussed later on. It is enough for me to explain at present that I was one of those persons for whom life in a city was an absolute necessity. It is not until one is tied to a locality that its defects become apparent. A street that interests the mind.